This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to the Escape Hour. Saturday afternoon, we are escaping, as usual, from this not-so-sunny city of Melbourne today, even though we love it. And this is Fiona. I'm here without Tad and Russ this week again because they are gallivanting around the world. Tad is in New York visiting family, and I believe that Russ has just left Greece, where, according to his posts on the Bookface, he had an amazing, amazing time. Dylan, you're helping us out today, standing in for us behind the panel. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to be on.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where we're going. I've got my passport packed.
Yeah.
Where are we heading off to?
We are going to Israel.
Nice.
I've never been to Israel. No, I've never been either. I've always wanted to go. And with us today to celebrate going to Israel is Afik Gal, who is the head chef at Melbourne's latest and very most popular venue, Mizanon, in the city. Welcome, Afik.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi, thanks for coming on. I know that, you know, your superstar chef, Eyal, is usually the man that sits in the interview shoes, but he's come, he's opened, launched the restaurant, and he's gone back to... Is he based in Tel Aviv?
He's based in Tel Aviv, but at the moment he's in New York towards the launching of the next Mizanon, actually.
I was just going to say, thanks to our great theme song, all about, well, just ended on New York, the new version of Mizanon will be opening in Chelsea, I believe, coming up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when did Mizanon open in Melbourne?
Mizanon was open in Melbourne at the end of August. The last week of August we opened. I actually wasn't here for the opening. I got here like a few days afterwards, just waiting for the visas and everything. But we are open now for 2 months.
Fantastic.
Happy to be here.
Wow. Well, you've made quite a storm in Melbourne since you've been here. I mean, for those people that are not aware, Mizanon is a pita restaurant. It's a restaurant that is pita-centric restaurant that focuses on the flavors of Israeli and French cuisine, putting high cuisine into the humble pita and making it an incredible
experience. We like to call it like a gourmet fast food restaurant or gourmet street food.
Yeah. I mean, Melburnians are just going to love it, and they have been flocking there. Dylan, you and I have to get down there, obviously.
Is it going to be hard to get a table?
Well, actually, there's no such thing as getting a table. You just have to come and get crowded with all the rest of the people, and you find a place. It's always a welcoming place, and
I hear it's set up kind of like an amphitheatre and, you know, there is no bookings, but it moves really quickly and it's got a great atmosphere.
Organic.
Yeah.
So it sounds...
That would be the worst.
That sounds nice. There's nothing worse than booking a place and then feeling like it's a chore to go out for a meal.
Yeah, I think Mizanon first started where Eyal wanted to have our food access to the as many people as possible. So basically, we took all our food and tried to see how we can put it literally on the street, you know. So anyone crossing by just goes in and out as they please. So that's the idea of Mizanon. It's out there. It's open. We always have as many doors as possible, so the space is as open as possible, and we try to create something, you know. You cannot just pass the street and stay indifferent. You're just kind of drawn in by the energy, by the music, by everything, all the commotion inside.
Something that I'm drawn to when I travel and when I see different types of food and different cultures is, what is Mizanon? Why that name? Obviously, it has such significance to you guys, but what does it mean?
Well, basically, the meaning is, the closest translation I could give it is a cafeteria, or it's like a very down-to-earth and cheap eatery that you'd have like in any street corner. Some people call it, you know, like the Menza and other places like this. So this would be the name for it in Israel. It's something that belongs more to the history. We don't have Mizanon by this definition today, but we have the Mizanon that we have created.
So it sounds so glamorous and mysterious to us, but it's just cafeteria. Yeah,
but I think this is a good example for a lot of things that we're doing, you know, because a lot of things sounds glamorous about our food as well. At least I'm quoting people talking to me, you know, and like maybe the best example I got here in Melbourne, we make a lot of tea, well, especially when it's cool outside, but we just make tea, and we, whoever walks in, first thing I try to do is give them a warm glass of tea in their hand.
Nice.
And like, people are going crazy for the tea, and they come to me excited, and they say like, what do you put in the tea? You know, it's so exciting. And you know, they're like almost disappointed when you tell them, you know, it's black tea, a little bit of sage, and a little bit of sugar. And you know, I think it's like, it always like creates something a bit different, because when you come there, you're engulfed with all this atmosphere and energy and all the friendly people that work there. So it always kind of creates something else. And Mizanon also sounds very, you know, luxurious, but we come from a very, very simple and basic culture.
But when you're traveling, you notice the little things. So that little bit of sage makes it so much more exotic. And you you go into a restaurant that's not just your typical restaurant, and you have all your senses awakened because you are just witnessing everything. It's a bit special.
Oh, I know. It's just that wonderful little component of why when there's a small cultural thing that comes from another place, and when you're experiencing it, either when you're overseas traveling or, you know, in your hometown when someone offers it to you, it is so exciting, and it just feels like you're, I mean, that's the great thing about going to Mizanon, I would imagine, is it feels like you're traveling really just by going down Hardware Lane.
Yeah.
I think that sounds really fun. I mean, I know that Eyal is well known for saying, we don't write recipes, we teach the story of the recipe to the cook.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the cook translates that so that the story of the recipe can be consumed and eaten. I mean, you have such a deceptively simple menu. It's, you know, it's not a very big menu. It's very straightforward. I mean, how often do you change the menu? Is it seasonal?
It is seasonal. Well, first of all, you know, I'm just learning everything as I go along. I'm fairly new to Melbourne and to Australia in general. It's my first visit to Australia, so I'm first, you know, getting familiarizing myself with all the products and the ingredients you have here. And yes, some of the stuff is seasonal. Like the best example I can think of is I was asked lately about seafood. Like, it's very popular in Australia and Melbourne. People love it. Why don't we have it so much on the menu? And one of the first thing I was disappointed maybe to learn when I got here to Melbourne is that a lot of the seafood is frozen. And we, by definition, we're not working with anything frozen.
Yeah.
Only fresh products. So, you know, I'm in touch with the suppliers whenever there's something in, something special, something that is fresh. So I would get that, and I'll put that on the menu. So it is probably, I don't know if, it's probably seasonal as well, but when things come up and I get a chance, then I'll try and put something new in the menu.
Like, you have ocean trout, belly, and avocado with sour cream, onion, pickles.
That sounds so good. I know, I first discovered flathead, which of course now is enormously popular, but I lived in, overseas for quite a long time, and I came back to Australia in 2000 and I was down near Wilson's Promontory, and I went to the pub and I said, so what of your fish is fresh and local? Because I was down by the beach, and they went, oh, it's all frozen except for the flathead. And at that point, I hadn't even heard of what flathead was. And of course, flathead wasn't very expensive or fancy. So I was like, well, we'll have the flathead then, because it was the only thing that wasn't frozen. So it's always disappointing when that happens. So, but we do have fantastic fish that comes out of local waters. So no doubt you'll be able to.
Yeah, I've used a little bit of, I tried one dish with the fillet bay scallops, and we did the Clarence River prawns when it's available. Mm. There's a very good pita with that.
Mm.
So I'm aiming for that. You know, we have a cuttlefish or calamari in a pita, mm. which is also good. This is something you can get fresh, like, almost daily. So these kind of things I do work with.
Well, I was also just noticing that the pitas themselves come from a joint. They're baked at Alassia Bakery in Brunswick, which is fantastic. A very well-known bakery here in Melbourne and much loved.
Yeah, that is true. It was a lot of debate about this issue mm. before we came to Melbourne. We were thinking, because we have a special brand of pita that we work with in Israel. Mm. It's like one of the largest bakeries in Israel. And actually, the two mizznons that we have in Europe are actually bringing their pitas from Israel.
Right.
So we were contemplating about this. And basically, Eyal said that you go halfway across the world.
Yeah.
You might as well, you know, start afresh and do your own thing. So we came here. It was about a two and a half month process to get the recipe right. We worked with Ismail, who's the owner of the bakery, and his sister Fatma, which are really doing a very nice job in that. And that's a work in progress all the time, you know. Oh, baking yeah. is tricky.
Yeah.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
This is The Escape Hour. Dylan Joel behind the panel, myself, Fiona, in front of the microphone, and with us is Ifik Gal from Mizznon. We were talking earlier about the how Eyal Shani, the high priest of Mizznon, is also known as the king of cauliflower. Now, the whole roasted cauliflower has become a bit of a thing. I have attempted it on a number of occasions at home, and sometimes more successfully than others. I've tried to do it when I boil the cauliflower a little bit first and then put it in the oven. I've also tried it without boiling it first and then just sticking it straight in the oven. There's a... I would love it, Afik, if you could give us a little rundown on this whole roasted cauliflower makes Mizznon so famous.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say a little bit why I think cauliflower became such a flagship of Mizznon and of all Eyal's kitchen. I think it's a great example of our old kitchen, the way our approach towards food and everything. I mean, it's a single item dish. What we believe in is really doing a lot of background work and really digging and looking for the best ingredients you can take and you can find. Mm. Once you got this amazing and perfect ingredient, then there's not a lot you need to do with it to make it tasty, you know?
So, yeah, absolutely.
Cauliflower is a great example. It's something also considered to be majestic and divine, and all there is behind this thing is the ingredients are cauliflower, olive oil, and salt.
Atlantic sea salt.
Exactly.
To
so
be specific.
For all these ingredients, you'll have to aim for the best you can get. So first of all, you want to try and get a very, very fresh cauliflower. It needs to be a young one.
Are there any signs of a young cauliflower if you're in the supermarket?
It's mainly size, I would say. It's about... 10 to 15 centimeters in diameter. Let's say around 15 would be more reasonable.
Okay, big.
Yeah, it's very, very dense.
Mm-hmm.
The cauliflower is a flower, basically. So the older it gets, it blooms and it opens.
Oh.
So when it's still young, it's very compact and dense. And then you get like a beautiful and very sexy surface on top, golden roasted on top of the cauliflower. So the cauliflower obviously will be the first ingredient you have to take care of and look for the right one. Second one, as you mentioned, is salt. We're using in Mizznon only Atlantic sea salt. It's very, very rich in mineral.
Do different oceans give different salts?
It does. Actually, these salts, I was actually aiming to look, because I know there's a lot of salt coming from Tasmania. So I was looking to I haven't started yet, but I had it in my mind, you know, if we're talking about sourcing local produce. So I'm very interested in trying to see what's on the market here from these areas. Basically, this one is from France because they have areas with very, very... The high tide goes like for about 10 kilometers distance. So it's very, very shallow. What they do is they just barricade it a little bit, and when the low tide, the ocean goes back. So there's a very thin layer of water stayed, and by the time the next high tide comes, all of this dehydrate, and they actually take all the salt out. So it's very fresh, it's very wet salt, it's very, very rich in mineral, it's just very tasty.
It's like the Murray River salt, the pink flakes, they're very flavoursome.
Yes, that is true.
Probably local to Melbourne.
I'm definitely planning to look into this because it's, you know, this is the intriguing thing is to come and see.
Yeah, we do have quite a few salts, local salts here, which fortunately have been put on the market because, you know, I mean, I grew up having just generic table salt, which is apparently one of the worst things that you can eat.
True, yeah.
So bland, that big white container of just, oof.
Yeah. It's not even good for salting the margarita rim, the rims of your margarita glass.
No, or even fish and chips.
Fish
and chips deserve better salt than that.
Everything deserves it. I mean, you take this salt and you put it in salad and you'll find out how amazing a salad can be, you know. So it really is. And if we're talking about local sourced products, so definitely the olive oil was a marvelous discovery we had here.
Oh, really? Now tell us where you're getting your olive oil from.
We're getting our olive oil from Mount Zero.
Oh, they make beautiful products.
They make beautiful products, seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And they make a really nice Murray sea salt also that has seaweed in it.
Really?
Ooh, that'd be nice.
It is. It's really good. Absolutely. Yeah. Expensive, but lasts for ages.
Everybody knows by now that good stuff is expensive. There's no running away from that.
That is
true. Extra virgin olive oil? It is.
It is an extra virgin olive oil, and it's really beautiful. Like, you know, we come from the Mediterranean, and you mentioned Greece earlier and Italy, like, these are basically the capital of olive oil in the world. And it was very exciting and very thrilling to come down here in Australia, which I'm completely unfamiliar with, and I'm learning as we go along all the ingredients and the products that can be found here. And to find this quality of olive oil here, I mean, generally speaking, you find very good olive oils in Australia, so it was a very good surprise.
So winter picking olives.
You spent a winter picking olives?
On the Mornington Peninsula. It's such an interesting thing where you just have these fruits that look so unappealing, make a delicious liquid that can make everything taste
better. I had quite a long conversation with my dad about this because they've planted a lot of olive trees just really for decoration more than anything. And then Dad was like, well, now I think we need to harvest it and make olive oil. So I spent an afternoon looking on the internet with him about how to make first press and where were you going to buy this press. I was like, Dad, this press is $3,000. He's like, oh, surely there's could be somebody around here we can get a press from. Anyway, so I don't know how far that's gone, but he was very keen to press his own olive oil.
I'm sure you'd have something like this in Australia. I mean, in Israel, a lot of people have their olive trees.
They would, yeah.
Or a lot of people, you know, they just grow in the wild, so they go and pick olives, and there's like places you go to press your olives. So you pay per kilo, whatever, and
that's
then you
what
just
we
produce
need,
your olive oil.
A public olive pressing
that's
place.
That's something we should do.
That's what we should do.
The next election that we have, that should be a key issue.
Yes, well, there's a few other hurdles to get over first, hopefully.
Pickles. Yes. I'm intrigued. I love pickles on the menu. Anything that's on your falafel
burger.
Pickles
are huge these days.
You have it on your minute steak. How do you pickle your own pickles?
Well, unfortunately, not yet, because we haven't found. We tried in several varieties of cucumbers when we got here, and obviously, coming in the winter is not the best time to get your gherkins or cucumbers. So. I'm still in contact with my suppliers to see when they should come very near. Very soon we should get like the right kind of varieties to pickle. everywhere else in the world, we do our own pickles. Okay. Here we had to start not with our pickles, but as soon as we are pickling stuff like cabbage and turnips. There's a nice little area where you can go and help yourself out for some pita and tahini, sour cream and pickles. So everybody has something small to take and eat on the side while they're waiting for the pita or to accompany the pitas.
I noticed our tahini is on the menu a lot. I'm not well versed with tahini.
Oh, it's so good.
Sell it to me. Sell me tahini.
Well, everybody knows hummus, right? And this is, well, this is something you have to make. Tahini is like the raw product. It's made out of sesame. This is the base of hummus paste, okay? So this is one of the major ingredients other than chickpea in the hummus paste. But like we said, we are using like the single item ingredient. So tahini is something we use a lot in our restaurants. The hummus is very, very heavy in taste as well.
I think we're saying there is no hummus on the menu.
Yeah.
No hummus on the menu.
No, we use only tahini. And that's because, like, this is the raw ingredient, and the way we make it. Also, first of all, we were very happy to find tahini here that's imported from Israel, and it's a very, very good quality of tahini. It's made out of a specific variety of Ethiopian sesame.
Oh, really? And I'm just tahini crazy. I just try all the varieties.
Yeah, it's also, you know, it's, first of all, obviously, it's very healthy. And you make it with water, lemon, and salt again. Very, very basic ingredients. And you get like a beautiful result, which is light. And I love it as well. It's beautiful in taste. And
you don't add any olive oil to your tahini? Just
nothing.
Lemon, salt,
and salt, water. And water. That's it.
Okay. I better adjust my tahini recipes. I've been putting in, you know, a little apple cider vinegar and some soy sauce. Yeah, well, and, you know, I'm adding all this stuff into it.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
This is the Escape Hour, and we are travelling through Israel with Afik Gal from Miznon and Dylan Joel behind the panel. And, well, actually, we haven't left Melbourne yet. We keep on saying we are travelling to Israel, but we're just travelling through the
food.
We're
too busy in Hardware Lane.
We're stuck in Hardware Lane. If any of our listeners out there have any questions for Afik or want to discuss anything regarding Israeli food, you can get in touch with us on SMS 0427 Joy 949. You can phone the front desk and chat to our front desk staff, 1300 Joy 949. I shouldn't say staff, Dylan, I should say volleys.
Yes, volunteers.
Absolutely.
Working hard.
You can also email us at onair@joy.org.au. We would love to hear from you. I want to thank all the volunteers, and I want to thank you, Dylan, for coming in and sticking around on Saturday to help me panel while the others are away.
No, it's all good. It's nice to come in and be on a different show. It's interesting.
Yeah, be on a different show.
And get a little bit hungry whilst I'm on radio.
I know. The good thing is that you could just pop out and after you finish here and grab a bite down just down on Hardware Lane.
Yeah.
We actually need to quietly complete our story about how to cook that cauliflower before we do actually do the next thing, which will be to travel to Israel. Because as I had mentioned off air, I have attempted the whole roasted cauliflower a number of times, and I've layered it with all these different toppings and nuts and all sorts of stuff. But I think my main problem is that I have a very old stove because I live in an older house, and obviously, I think I wasn't choosing the youngest and the freshest cauliflower, so...
Yeah, that could help. Okay, so basically, it's a relatively simple recipe. You have to boil water and salt. It has to be very salty. We always say, relating to the thing that we're telling, the story to the cooks, and rather than writing down recipes, we are always aiming, we say it should taste like seawater.
So wow, it's that's a very a lot of salt.
Yeah. So there's a lot of salt into water. So you boil a big pot of salty water, the one that can fit your cauliflower in. Yeah. And when the water is fully boiling, you'll just lower the cauliflower. We don't take any of the leaves or anything. We just blanch it whole as it is. You lower it with the flour face down into the water. You'd blanch it for probably anywhere between 7 to 10 minutes at home. When I take it out, basically what I'm looking to see, I'm pressing gently on the cauliflower and I want to see it starts to give in. So it barely starts to get soft. It's not really soft by the time I take it out. You take the cauliflower out, you let it cool for about 15-20 minutes outside of the water. It will drain a lot of the water as well by that time. So put it somewhere where it has, where the water has where to go. And then you'll just put it on a baking sheet in a tray on the oven tray.
And you've preheated your oven.
Yeah, you preheated your oven to the maximum temperature you can get in your oven. Therefore, mentioning the old oven. Yes, this is part of the reason maybe it didn't work out all the way through. So you put the maximum temperature on your oven. I mean, in the kitchen, we do it sometime around 300 degrees Celsius. And then another very important thing is the right amount of olive oil. So you don't want it to be very greasy. You don't want to get the feeling of like a deep-fried cauliflower. And the right amount, the secret of the right amount of olive oil is you'll have to wet your hands. Basically, what I do is I pour a little bit of olive oil on my hands. I rub both hands together, and you just pat the surface of the cauliflower. Just whatever oil residue is on your hand is enough to coat the cauliflower, and that's the exact amount of olive oil you need for the cauliflower.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. After that, you drizzle a little bit more Atlantic sea salt on the cauliflower and you put it into the oven. Basically, in the oven, what you need is to get the nice golden roasted colors. So that would take probably another 20 to 30 minutes. And this is something you just need to check for your cauliflower, see when it gets the nice, beautiful golden colors. And by that time, it should also be very tender. And therefore, also why we mentioned having a very dense and compact cauliflower, because if not, they just open up and break and they don't look very sexy at the end of the process.
No, we definitely would like a sexy cauliflower, definitely. For sure.
With that much salt, does it last a while? Can you have either the next day? Does it go well for leftovers?
It does. Again, if it's a very, it's a young cauliflower, it'll last. Definitely.
My goodness. I love that. Okay. I have been doing it all wrong. I had the cauliflower facing up. I didn't have the oven on high enough. Well, I think I've had my problem solved. I haven't got a new stove yet, but I think I'm going to give it a go.
On the wish list. Christmas time.
Well, I might have to move out. I need to move out to get a new stove.
Maybe you can move to Israel.
We could move to Israel. And if I was going to move to Israel, I think, where would you recommend?
Well, that's a difficult question. Well, definitely the most popular places, if you're a city dweller, the most popular place would be Tel Aviv. Okay, it's the most cosmopolitan city and everything possible going on around in this city. It's a crazy place.
It's the gay capital of the Middle East.
That too.
There is an enormous amount of joy de vie. There is. It's was one of the first. Well, Israel was one of the first places in that in the region to legalize same-sex marriage, and it's a very open and welcoming place for the community in general.
Yeah, there's a very very big and famous world famous gay parade. There's actually they treat it like gay tourism as well around this time of the year, and Tel Aviv is definitely very open, very
popular. When is the Pride March?
Ooh. It's a tough question.
That's right. I can't
get it off my head.
I could Google that in the break.
Yeah,
so you were living in Tel Aviv before you came to Melbourne?
Yeah, I've been living there in the last... Actually, I've been living in Yafo, which is... it's part of Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is called Tel Aviv Yafo. It's a southern suburb, you might call it, although it's kind of a city for itself.
Right. I thought it was a city on its own right, but that is more on the coast, and I hear it's a beautiful place. It's very exciting. It's got this fantastic blend of Israeli and Arabic culture, and it's supposed to be a beautiful place.
Yeah, first of all, it's you got two cultures living there side by side. You got a lot of big Arab community living there. And it also, it's a very, very old city, so you have a lot of historical sites and very old building blended in, you know, with all the good stuff of their new era. So,
what's the dining scene like in Tel Aviv and places like Yafa? I mean, obviously it's where you'd find the pinnacle of local cuisine, but is there a lot of other cuisines available? Because it's cosmopolitan, I would imagine.
You can get probably almost everything you can think of in Israel. There's very, very high fine dining. There is obviously a lot of street food in there. Mm-hmm. And like any ethnicity you'd be looking for. Well, very different from here. I met a lot of, it's very big, like old Asian cuisine. Mm-hmm. So it's not that developed in Israel, and it's a different. Here you'd find a bit more genuine Asian cuisine. In Israel, it's a bit more westernized. Mm, but other than that, you find like almost every kind of food, and you have beautiful ingredients in Israel, so there's great restaurants in Tel Aviv to find.
So what does the native Tel Avivian do on a weekend?
Well,
how do they spend their time?
Well, Tel Aviv is a lot of going out and celebrating, and a lot of bars and pubs and spending good fun at the night till very, very late. So, yeah, it's a very young city, very bustling. A lot of stuff to do there.
It does sound very exciting. If you like to party, don't you think this is a destination, Dylan, we have to get to?
I think so. I think it sounds very, very good. Very good. I think I'll head to Mizon first, have a bit of a sample, because it might be a little bit cheaper.
Exactly.
Than
Exactly. And it's closer as well. To exactly. Just around the corner, so you might as well start there.
Just walk around.
Is there any, like, what's your favourite time of the year?
Well, I think winter is a good time because it's not winter in any sense that you would imagine here in Melbourne, you know. You got, I think, around 300 sunny days in Israel.
There's a reason to
300 sunny days in a year. So there's not a lot of winter going on, and it's very moderate. The summer, Tel Aviv is very humid. Mm. But you got, it's just on the sea, on the Mediterranean Sea. Mm. So it's got beautiful beaches and everything. But definitely winter is a bit more, there's not a lot of moderate things in Israel. Everything is a bit more on the extreme side. So winter is a bit more on the moderate side. It's fun.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
We're on the Escape Hour. We're here with Afiq Gal, who is here from Mizon to talk all about traveling through Israel. Well, you've just sold us on Tel Aviv. I'm sorry, are people that live in Tel Aviv Tel Avivites or Tel Avivians?
Tel Avivians, yeah.
They're Tel Avivians.
Yeah.
So, what about outside of the big cities in Israel? I mean, it's a compact country. I know it's got a lot to offer. Are there any favorite places that you have outside of the city to visit?
I think this is also one of the unique things about Israel. It's like tiny. Mm. It's about, in the widest part, it would be about 70 kilometers wide, and it's 550 kilometers north to south. Mm. So it's a very tiny country, and it has like almost everything to offer, starting from a mountain with snow at the top where you can actually ski in the winter, all the way to desert that goes to 45, 47 degrees Celsius in the summer. And obviously the Dead Sea, the lowest place on earth.
I have actually been to the Dead Sea.
You have?
I have.
On the Jordanian side?
On the Jordanian side.
I haven't. How was it?
It was just like, I'm sure it is on the Israeli side.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I did make this hilarious mistake because I really didn't quite understand that you don't dive into the Dead Sea because it's really, talk about salty.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's
technically
really,
it's a hard thing to do, diving in.
You can't dive. You can try to dive.
Because it's so thick with...
Yeah.
The salt is so thick that you actually, you can't dive. You could give it a try and all you do is get a hell of a lot of salt in your mouth and in your eyes and you come up spluttering and just...
Burns
don't,
like
just don't
quicksand,
do
in a way?
No.
It feels very oily and basically you float like the most famous photos you get from the Dead Sea is people lying on their back in the water and reading newspaper.
Yeah.
So you basically just float.
Does that mean it's good for the skin and good for the any wounds?
Yeah, I think it's quite popular to go there and cover yourself. There are mud baths.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't do this when I was there, although I would have thought love to. But there are sort of spas and things around the Dead Sea where you can have all these treatments with the mud, etc. And then you can jump in, well, not jump into the Dead Sea, you could walk into the Dead Sea and rub it all off. And it is supposed to be incredibly good for you.
Yeah, it's supposed to be very healthy for the skin. But the whole Dead Sea area is like a beautiful desert area. There's a lot of places to do, a lot of beautiful trails to do, starting from several hours to
hiking trails.
Hiking trails, yeah.
Gorgeous.
And there's like, funny enough, but around the Dead Sea area, there's a lot of water sources. So it's like beautiful. You get to a fountain of water or a waterfall or places like this just amidst the desert, which is very green. It's like a green lung in the middle of the yellowy
desert.
Beautiful. Yeah. Amazing area. So basically, me personally, I love all the desert areas in Israel. I grew up and studied in high school as well, always in the desert areas of Israel, and I love hiking. And it's a beautiful country to do hiking in as well.
Oh, I'm a big hiker. I was in Japan recently. I love hiking in Japan. And I know from reading your blog that you spent quite a bit of time in Canada, which no doubt is a great place to hike as well.
Yeah, in Canada, unfortunately, I didn't get to hike that much, but this is where I did my studies and everything. But it's a beautiful country, no doubt.
You were mentioning your schooling. How do you become such a good chef? Was there an education process? Was that in Israel? Where?
No, actually, there was an education process that did take place in Canada. Actually, I studied in Cordon Bleu in Ottawa, which was very good for me. It gave me all the fundamental knowledge for cooking and working in the kitchen. But I could definitely say that whatever I'm handling and doing now is as far as possible from French cuisine. I mean, French cuisine, French kitchen is very, very intricate, long process, a lot of sauces, a lot of, you know, tiring procedures. And our kitchen is as simple as it gets. No spices whatsoever. We use no spices in the kitchen. We have Atlantic sea salt and black pepper. These are the only seasonings that we use.
Peppers used, not just salt. So
yeah, black peppercorn crushed daily. I went with my family for a trip in the Dandenong National Park.
Oh, beautiful!
And we ended up in this beautiful bakery there, and I stumbled upon a machine I've never seen before. Apparently, it's called an oat roller. I might sound a bit ignorant now, but
I don't know what that is either.
Okay, so basically, it's a machine that you use to roll your oats freshly. That way, it cracks, and you still get to enjoy all the healthy oils of the oats and everything. And I just saw the mechanism, and I said, "Wow, this is what I need to crush our peppers." You know, so I bought this machine up there from the bakery, and we have it in Mizno now. And I think it's one of the most impressive pieces of machinery I've encountered in a long time. Very simple; it's hand manual, and we crush our peppercorn daily. That way you can really enjoy the freshness and all the flavor.
Yes, I've noticed that in the peppercorn things got a little bit crazy. Like there's Kampot pepper, which is a very popular type of pepper. I think it comes from Cambodia. I probably need to have a little bit of think about that. But pepper is a very, you know,
it's a whole world.
It's a whole world. It's just like salt.
This is one of the, like, I have few ingredients that to me, growing up in Eyal's kitchen, they were the discovery. And one of them is actually, it's a black peppercorn. It's a variety called Bold. It's grown in Brazil, I think, as well as other places. But, I mean, this thing is just so rich in flavors. It was really, first time I encountered it and actually tasted it, it was like a revelation for me. So,
wow, I love that. I'm going to start exploring peppers next, because that's something that, you know, we've just talked about the most elegant and simple ingredients: salt, pepper, olive oil,
and the onion. I notice is recurring on the menu.
Yeah,
Is that the power of the onion?
No, actually, it's just onion is something that goes along very well in a pita. It's got a texture, a little bit crunchy to it, and it adds a very... it's a great supplement for the pita itself. It gives you a fresh feeling. I know a lot of people are not big fan of that, but...
That's right. Onion can be very divisive.
Yeah, but this is something that can be omitted. It appears in a lot of the pitas, I know, but...
And you make your own pitas, the actual component?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're made with Alassia Bakery in Brunswick.
Nice.
We're getting them daily. They're shipped into the Misnon, and we're just kind of completing baking in the Misnon, so they're baked fresh. They are served fresh all the time, right? Humid and fresh and sassy from the oven.
Carbohydrates are the global language.
Well, I mean, I guess it's pretty minimal, isn't it? Because it's not as if it's too... I mean, I just came back from Japan where the sandwich the bread thickness of the sandwiches is insane, fantastic and delicious, but massive slices of bread.
But we also, you know, I think if you come by and you see that the menu talks to, like, I think a very wide variety, so there's a lot of stuff outside of the pita. There's a lot of vegetarian portions. There are vegan dishes as well. So I think we offer something for almost everyone.
I mean, of course, that's the whole thing, that in Israeli cuisine there's a lot of vegetables. It's very vegetarian-friendly, vegan-friendly in that regard. As a matter of fact, you know, there's a new vegan and vegetarian pub that's just launched in Melbourne with a young Israeli chef.
Really?
Yeah, okay. His name is David Raziel, I think. And it's just in Carlton. It's called Green Man's Arms. So if you like the Israeli flavours... There's a vegetarian place that's just... And vegan place. I don't know. There's a lot of
vegetarian fish and chips in London near Buckingham Palace.
No kidding.
And the fish was halloumi.
Right.
So I was like, I was happy.
Yeah, that would be delicious.
It was delicious. It had the texture there, but
One of the things I've always thought is just incredibly wrong, which I know most people won't agree with me, is chicken salt.
You're not a fan of chicken salt?
No. Ooh, yuck.
Never heard of it, I must admit.
Yeah, it's at a
so
fish
glad you're with
shop.
Me on that one.
I'm not sure what it is. There's something about it that's when you...
I don't know. I don't even really want to know how it's made.
It's like the tracksuit pants of food.
So
it's
right.
Just sometimes you just need it to feel comfortable. Slip into some chicken salt and...
Yeah.
But your face is not.
No, it's sort of makes my skin crawl when you find those dishes where they have. I mean, obviously, I don't eat chicken or don't like chickens, but when you there's a beautiful dish and then it's got some like topping of chicken skin, and I'm like, yuck!
It's like lemon pepper though. I've had that on
lemon pepper. There are some very dodgy combinations.
Mm. But there's some good ones. So we talk about the good and the bad.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's all out there. It's all food. It's all up for consumption. And just because, I mean, not everyone's going to like peanut butter and banana sandwiches.
No. But maybe Nutella and banana.
Yeah, Nutella and banana is the next thing in Misnon, man.
Yeah, well, you have a rail of bananas, strawberries, and sour cream. What does your sweets?
Yeah, well,
what is that?
First of all, like I said, the next thing would be the Nutella and banana.
Mm.
This is something we do, and this is something we do in Israel. When Eyal came here, he did like a different version of it on the sour cream. We just take bananas and mix them with a lot of sugar. It creates this kind of sauce that you caramelize them a little bit.
Yum.
And then you put it in a small piece of pita, just like 2-3 bites.
Mm-hmm.
And this can come with the sour cream and the strawberries. And very soon to come, it'll be in the Nutella and banana, which I heard already from someone, it takes you back to childhood. And this is definitely something we...
Well, I think that in my office where I work from 9 to 5, one of my staff has got this other great taste sensation, which is, of course, tahini with cacao blended in the jar. So it's like a delicious cocoa tahini. And then you actually drizzle that on your sliced banana before you eat it, and that's incredibly delicious. I mean, tahini's going a long way.
Yeah.
But I notice you don't have halva on the desserts.
No, we don't have halva on desserts. We don't have it in Israel either. I mean, we use a lot of tahini, but not to this point.
Right, so halva is not necessarily an Israeli dish.
I would say a bit more Mediterranean than Israeli.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is the Escape Hour with Fiona and Dylan, here chatting to Afiq, who is the head chef of a restaurant that recently was given the perfect score by a reviewer, the lovely Danny Valent. 5 out of 5. That must have felt pretty great.
Yeah. I learned to appreciate from our audience, and I got a lot of compliments about it, and they say it doesn't happen very often.
Oh,
so.
Never. Never. I mean, I know 5's a relatively easy number to get, 5 out of 5, as opposed to, you know, out of 20. But it doesn't matter. That's a perfect score.
Something that would have helped you probably get that perfect number is something that's on your menu. It says, what are you thinking about? In the end, your thoughts are the most important treasures for our creation. Having the impact of people that eat your food and having their feedback, is that very important?
Well, it is very important, but I think it also relates a lot to... we have Miznon now. We have 3 restaurants in Israel. We got 1 in Paris and 1 in Vienna, and this is the third one outside of Israel. So whenever we come to a new place... very important part of it is to learn the new place and see what's the ingredients you can find and getting to know the local kitchen, the local preferences, what people love and eat around here. Mm. And maybe like the best example for it would be the trout belly that you talked about earlier, because this is something you can clearly see is derived from Eyal going around Melbourne, and you can see wherever you go, the breakfast that people eat at the cafe with avocado and with the salmon and the toast and everything. So
that's what I had this morning.
There you go.
Yum.
So this is a perfect example to coming down to a new culture and trying to feel it around a little bit. I know wherever we go, we try to go around the city, you know, and take in a little bit and see what it is about before we come down to the kitchen to create our menu. So this is an important part for us.
It sounds like an amazing philosophy and obviously made you very welcome in Melbourne. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been fantastic to hear all about the venue and, you know, a little bit more about Israel. We would love to get down there. I think that's on the bucket list.
Yeah. The immediate
get it out of the bucket list. Just come down to Hardwell Lane. You'll enjoy it.
I've just been staring at the menu over the hour and just seeing how many beautiful things there are. So I wouldn't know what to have.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
As we say, you can go wrong. So just pick something and I promise you'll enjoy it.
So next week on the Escape Hour, we will be traveling to Peru and Chile. So stay tuned. Thanks, everyone, for listening in.
Yeah, this has been the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.